Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Hello, and welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ana Mateo. This program is for English learners, so we speak a bit slower. And our stories are written especially for people learning English. Here are the stories we have for you on today's program. First, Dan Friedel and Katie Weaver bring us the education report. Then we will hear from Dan Novak about animals and plants at risk in the Amazon. This week, Dr. Jill Robbins brings us words and their stories. And we will finish our 30 minutes together with The Making of a Nation. But first, the education report.
Would you turn down a top national university for a historically black college and university, or HBCU in the United States? Nicole Hannah-Jones did. Hannah-Jones is the Pulitzer Prize-winning writer who created the New York Times' 1619 Project. She was recently offered a job at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, UNC. The school is one of the top national universities. The offer came without tenure, a lifetime appointment for a professor. The decision brought criticism and protests. In early July, UNC leaders changed their minds and voted to award tenure to Hannah-Jones. But instead, she accepted a teaching position at Howard University, an HBCU in Washington, D.C. On the same day, Howard also announced the appointment of best-selling writer Ta-Nehisi Coates. Coates wrote about his experience as a young black man growing up in Baltimore, Maryland. His 2015 book, Between the World and Me, won a National Book Award.
Howard is one of more than 100 historically black colleges and universities recognized by the U.S. Department of Education. HBCUs started as a place to educate African Americans as they continued to be barred from most universities after the Civil War. The late U.S. President George H.W. Bush once said, "At a time when many schools barred their doors to black Americans, these colleges offered the best, and often the only, opportunity for a higher education." Most HBCUs lie in the area from southern Texas to eastern Pennsylvania. While most students are black, anyone can go to an HBCU. The National Center for Education Statistics reported that non-blacks made up 24% of the students at HBCUs in 2018.
Mark Ballard writes for The Advocate, a newspaper in Baton Rouge. At the beginning of 2021, Ballard wrote an article called "Historically Black Colleges Come into Prominence with Joe Biden." Ballard wrote about Vice President Kamala Harris, who went to Howard in the 1980s. He also noted Raphael Warnock, a new U.S. senator from Georgia, who attended Morehouse College, another HBCU in Atlanta. Ballard observed, never before have so many HBCU graduates been tapped to serve in the highest levels of government.
So Morehouse and Howard, I think, are kind of discriminated against because of what their mission is. But I also think that they have a first-class education and have attracted major faculty to their colleges.
For some time, financial support from government and wealthy donors was not widely available for HBCUs and their students. But that is changing too. When Hannah Jones and Coates joined Howard University, their positions were supported with a $20 million donation from the Knight Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and a donor who did not want to be named. Mackenzie Scott's recent donation is another important marker. Scott, one of the world's richest women, is the former wife of Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. In 2020, she gave away about $4 billion to several organizations, including about 20 HBCUs. That amount came on top of President Joe Biden's American Rescue Plan to add over $2.6 billion to HBCUs.
I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Thanks, Dan and Katie. Now let's hear from Dan Novak.
A new report says that more than 10,000 kinds of living things could disappear forever because of the Amazon rainforest's destruction. The rainforest surrounding South America's Amazon River is the world's largest. The report said 35% of the rainforest has been destroyed or damaged. The report is by the Science Panel for the Amazon. The project brought together 200 international scientists through the United Nations Sustainable Development Network. It is a detailed study of the Amazon rainforest and its importance to the world's climate. Reducing deforestation and forest destruction to zero in less than 10 years is critical, the report said. The scientists also called for replanting trees that were destroyed. The rainforest stores large amounts of carbon and is extremely important in fighting climate change. The report said that the plants and soil of the Amazon hold 200 billion metric tons of carbon. That is 400% of the world's yearly carbon dioxide emissions. The continued destruction of the Amazon rainforest also threatens more than 8,000 plants and 2,300 animals, the report added. Mercedes Bustamante is a professor at the University of Brasilia. She spoke in an online presentation of some of the study's findings. She said the destruction of the Amazon also presents a serious risk to humans. Colombia's former president Juan Manuel Santos also spoke during the online discussion. He said there has been a lack of political leadership among the 8 countries in the Amazon area. The report said 18% of the Amazon area has already been deforested, mostly for agriculture and illegal timber. Another 17% of the rainforest has been damaged. Scientists said the main goal should be protecting existing plants and bodies of water rather than repairing damaged areas. A separate study, released in the science publication Nature, said that some parts of the Amazon are releasing more carbon than they take in. Luciana Gatti from Brazil's Space Research Agency led the study. She said carbon emissions are highest in the southeastern part of the Amazon area, where there are high rates of deforestation. She said many trees there are dying from lack of rain and rising temperatures. I'm Dan Novak.
Thanks, Dan. Now let's hear from Dr. Jill Robbins.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. On this program, we explore words and expressions in the English language, and we often explain where they come from and how to use them. In the summer months, we often get together with our family members who live far away. If you listen in as people talk with and about their families, you might hear some interesting expressions. Like many idioms, it is often difficult to understand these expressions simply by knowing the meaning of individual words and the grammar of the sentence in which they appear. This week, we will explore a few of these expressions so you will understand them better when you hear them. While watching television with your family in a crowded room, you might hear, "Your father was not a glassblower." Of course, it is impossible for a person to be made of glass. That expression really means you are blocking the view of someone else and they want you to move. A similar expression is, "You make a better door than a window." It also means, "Please move out of the way." When a child starts to act just like the parent, we say, "He's a chip off the old block." This suggests the image of an artist making a statue of someone from a block of stone. It can mean that the child is made of the same material as the parent. In a similar way, we may think that a child's action can show how they will act as an adult. To express this idea, we use the phrase, "The child is father to the man." Lighting a fire for a family barbecue is a job that can be easy with the right tools. After she lit the barbecue grill, I heard my sister say, "And Bob's your uncle, there's the fire." This expression means something is easy. It describes how those in high positions may sometimes give jobs to family members, making their lives easier. There are other expressions that have to do with money in the family. Someone who starts out life in a wealthy family was born with a silver spoon in their mouth. And an adult may warn a child, "A fool and his money are soon parted." In other words, do not make a bad investment or spend money unwisely. And a child who is not given an inheritance is said to be cut off without a penny. My younger brother liked to play with the boys on our street who always caused trouble. Mom told him to stay away from the troublemakers with this expression, "Birds of a feather flock together." She meant that if he does not want people to think he is one of the troublemakers, he should not spend time with them. That is good advice. The child who does not listen to mother's words is in danger of becoming the black sheep of the family. That expression describes a family member whose behavior gives them a bad reputation. Speaking of animals, our cat is going to have kittens soon. A friend who saw her said she was in a family way. Soon the cat will have her own family to care for. Finally, When a group of people live or work closely together, they might say, "We are like one big happy family. We argue all the time." This expression could mean that the group is happy to be so close, or, if said with irony, it means the group is not happy to work together. And that's all the time we have for this Words in Their Stories. I'm Jill Robbins.
We turn now to the making of a nation. Yesterday, we talked about the visits to the New World by Christopher Columbus and other explorers sailing for Spain and Portugal. Today, Steve Ember tells the story of the first permanent English settlements in North America.
England was the first country to compete with Spain for claims in the New World. Queen Elizabeth I supported explorations as early as the 1570s. Sir Humphrey Gilbert led the first English settlement efforts, but he did not establish any lasting settlement. He died as he was returning to England. Gilbert's half-brothers, Walter Raleigh, continued his work. Raleigh sent a number of ships to explore the east coast of North America. He named an area of the coast Virginia in honor of Queen Elizabeth, who never married and was known as the Virgin Queen. In 1585, about 100 men settled on Roanoke Island off the coast of the present-day state of North Carolina. These settlers returned to England a year later. Another group went to Roanoke the next year. This group included a number of women and children. But the supply ships that Raleigh sent to the colony failed to arrive. When help got there in 1590, none of the settlers could be found. At least some of the settlers may have become part of the Indian tribe that lived in the area. One reason for the delay in getting supplies to Roanoke was the attack of the Spanish Navy against England in 1588. King Philip of Spain had decided to invade England, but the small English ships, combined with a fierce storm, defeated the huge Spanish fleet. As a result, Spain was no longer able to block English exploration. England discovered that supporting colonies so far away cost a lot of money. So Queen Elizabeth took no more action to do it. Not until after her death in 1603 did England begin serious efforts to start colonies in America. In 1606, the new English king, James I, gave two business groups permission to establish colonies in Virginia, the area claimed by England. Companies were organized to carry out the move. The London Company sent 100 settlers to Virginia in 1606. The group landed there in May 1607 and founded Jamestown. It was the first permanent English colony in the New World. The colony seemed about to fail from the start. The settlers did not plant their crops in time, so they soon had no food. Their leaders lacked the farming and building skills needed to survive on the land. More than half the settlers died during the first winter. The businessmen controlling the colony from London knew nothing about living in such a wild place. They wanted the settlers to search for gold and explore local rivers in hopes of finding a way to the east. One settler knew this was wrong. His name was Captain John Smith. He helped the colonists build houses and grow food by learning from the local Indians. Still, the Jamestown settlers continued to die each year from disease, starvation, and Indian attacks. The London Company sent 6,000 settlers to Virginia between 1606 and 1622. More than 4,000 died during that time. Historians say that all the settlers surely would have died without the help of the local Powhatan Indians. The Indians gave the settlers food. They taught them how to live in the forest. And the Powhatan Indians showed the settlers how to plant new crops and how to clear the land for building. The settlers accepted the Indians' help. Then, however, the settlers took whatever else they wanted by force. In 1622, the local Indians attacked the settlers for interfering with Indian land. 340 settlers died. The colonists answered the attack by destroying the native tribes living along Virginia's coast. The settlers recognized that they would have to grow their own food and survive on their own without help from England or anyone else. The Jamestown colony was clearly established by 1624. It was even beginning to earn money by growing and selling a new crop, tobacco. The other early English settlements in North America were much to the north, in what is today the state of Massachusetts. The people who settled there left England for reasons different than those who settled in Jamestown. The Virginia settlers were looking for ways to earn money for English businesses. The settlers in Massachusetts were seeking religious freedom. King Henry VIII of England had separated from the Roman Catholic Church. His daughter, Queen Elizabeth, established the Protestant faith in England. It was called the Church of England or the Anglican Church. The Anglican Church, however, was similar to the Roman Catholic Church. Not all Protestants liked this idea. Some wanted to leave the Anglican Church and form religious groups of their own. In 1606, members of one group in the town of Scrooby did separate from the Anglican Church. About 125 people left England for Holland. They found problems there too, so they decided to move again to the New World. These people were called pilgrims. Pilgrims are people who travel for religious reasons. About 35 pilgrims were among the 102 passengers and crew on a ship called the Mayflower in 1620. The Mayflower set sail from England, headed for Virginia, but the ship never reached Virginia. It was blown far off its planned course. Instead, it reached land far to the north, on Cape Cod Bay. The group decided to stay there instead of trying to find Jamestown far to the south in Virginia. They settled what would become the Massachusetts Bay Colony. They called the colony Plymouth, naming it after the harbor in England from which they departed on their voyage to the New World. The Pilgrims and the others aboard the Mayflower believed they were not under English control since they did not land in Virginia. They saw the need for rules that would help them live together peacefully. They wrote a plan of government, which they called the Mayflower Compact. It was the first such plan ever developed in the New World. They elected William Bradford as the first governor of the Plymouth Colony. We know about the first 30 years of the colony, as William Bradford described it in his book of Plymouth Plantation. It is also sometimes referred to as William Bradford's Journal. It actually tells the story of the Pilgrims from 1608, when they settled in the Netherlands through the Mayflower voyage until the year 1647. It ends with a list, written in 1650, of Mayflower passengers and what happened to them. As happened in Jamestown, about half the settlers in Plymouth died during the first winter. The survivors were surprised to find an Indian who spoke English. His name was Squanto. He had been kidnapped by an English sea captain and had lived in England before returning to his people. The Pilgrims believed God had sent them Squanto. He made it possible for them to communicate with the native people. He showed them the best places to fish, what kind of crops to plant, and how to grow them. He provided them with all kinds of information they needed to survive. The settlers invited the Indians to a feast in the month of November to celebrate their successes and to thank Squanto for his help. Americans remember this feast when they celebrate the holiday of Thanksgiving Day in November. Other English settlers began arriving in the area now called New England. One large group was the Puritans. Like the Pilgrims, the Puritans disagreed with the Anglican Church, but they did not want to leave the church. The Puritans wanted to change it, to make it more holy in their view. Their desire for this change made them unwelcome in England. The first ship carrying Puritans left England for America in 1630. By the end of that summer, 1,000 Puritans had landed in the Northeast. Charles, the new English king, had given permission for them to settle in the Massachusetts Bay area. The Puritans began leaving England in large groups. Between 1630 and 1640, 20,000 sailed for New England. They risked their lives on the dangerous trip. They wanted to live among people who believed as they did. The Puritans and other Europeans, however, found a very different people already living in the New World. They were the Native Americans, or Indians, as Columbus called them, after thinking he had reached the East.
And that's our program for today. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world.
I'm Anna Mateo.